51. The 30s were zombie years. Civilization had been killed, but it kept walking the earth, staggering towards some fate even worse than death. Everyone felt it. The culture of the time was rife with fear and anger, denial and guilt, shame and regret, repression and the return of the repressed. They went through the motions, always in a state of suspended dread, always aware of their wounded status, wondering what massive stroke would fall next, and how they would manage to ignore that one too, when it was already such a huge effort to ignore the ones that had happened so far, a string of them going all the way back to 2020. Certainly the Indian heat wave stayed a big part of it. They could neither face it nor forget it. They couldn't think about it, but they couldn't not think about it, not without a huge subconscious effort. The images, the sheer numbers. These recalled the Holocaust, which had left a huge hole in civilization's sense of itself. That was 6 million people, but an old story, and of Jewish people killed by Germans. It was a German thing. The Palestinians' Nakba, the partition of India. On and on these bad stories went, the numbers always unimaginable. But always before it had been certain groups of people who were responsible, people from an earlier, more barbaric time, or so they told themselves. And always these thoughts obtruded to be an attempt to stave off the heat wave, which was now said to have killed 20 million. As many people, in other words, as soldiers had died in World War I, a death toll which had taken 4 years of intensely purposeful killing. And the heat wave had only taken 2 weeks. It somewhat resembled the Spanish flu of 1918 to 1920, they said. But not. Not a pathogen, not genocide, not a war. Simply human action and inaction, their own action and inaction, killing the most vulnerable. And more would surely follow, because they all were vulnerable in the end. And yet still they burned carbon. They drove cars, ate meat, flew in jets, did all the things that had caused the heat wave and would cause the next one. Profits still were added up in a way that led to shareholder dividends, and so on. Everyone alive knew that not enough was being done, and everyone kept doing too little. Repression, of course, followed. It was all too Freudian. But Freud's model for the mind was the steam engine, meaning containment, pressure, and release. Repression thus built up internal pressure, then the return of the repressed was a release of that pressure. It could be vented, or it could simply blow up the engine. How then people in the 30s? A hiss or a bang? The whistle of vented pressure doing useful work, as in some functioning engine? Or boom? No one could say, and so they staggered on day to day, and the pressure kept building. So it was not really a surprise when a day came that 60 passenger jets crashed in a matter of hours. All over the world, flights of all kinds. Although when the analyses were done, it became clear that a disproportionate number of these flights had been private or business jets, and the commercial flights that had gone down had been mostly occupied by business travelers. But people, innocent people, flying for all kinds of reasons, all dead. About 7,000 people died that day, ordinary citizens going about their lives. Later it was shown that clouds of small drones had been directed into the flight paths of the planes involved, following their engines. The drones had been mostly destroyed, and their manufacturers and flyers had never been conclusively tracked. Quite a few terrorist groups took credit for the action in the immediate aftermath, and demanded various things. But it has never been clear that any of them really had anything to do with it. That multiple groups would claim responsibility for such a crime just added to the horror felt at the time. What kind of world were they in? One message was fairly obvious. Stop flying. And indeed, many people stopped. Before that day, there had been 500,000 people in the air at any given moment. Afterward, that number plummeted, especially after the second round of crashes occurred a month later, this time bringing down 20 planes. After that, commercial flights often flew empty, then were canceled. Private jets had stopped flying. Military planes and helicopters had also been attacked, so they too curtailed their activities and flew only if needed, as if in a war. As indeed, they were. It was noticed that none of the experimental battery-powered planes had been brought down, and no biofuel-powered planes, also no blimps, dirigibles, or hot air balloons, no airships of any kind. But in that period, there were so few of these, it was hard to tell at the time if they had been given a pass or not. It looked like they had, it seemed to make sense, and the surge in airship manufacture, which had already gotten a small start, has never ceased to this day. The war for the Earth is often said to have begun on Crash Day, and it was later that same year when container ships began to sink, almost always close to land. Torpedoes from nowhere, a different kind of drone. It was noticed early on in this campaign that ships often went down where they could form the foundations for new coral reefs. In any case, they were going down. They ran on diesel fuel, of course. Loss of life in these sinkings was minimal, but world trade was severely impacted. Stock markets fell even lower than they had after Crash Day. A worldwide recession, a feeling of loss of control, price spikes in consumer goods, the clear prospect of the full-blown depression that indeed followed a few years later. It was a time of dread. 2 months after Crash Day, a group called Kali, or the Children of Kali, issued a manifesto over the internet. No more fossil fuel burning transport. That was about 20 to 25% of civilization's total carbon burn at this point, and all of it vulnerable to disruption, as the manifesto put it. Next up, the Children of Kali, or someone using that name, told the world, cows. Later that same year, the group announced that mad cow disease, bovine spongiform encephalopathy, had been cultured and introduced by a drone dart into millions of cattle all over the world. Everywhere but in India, but especially in the United States and Brazil and England and Canada. Nothing could stop these cattle from sickening and dying in a few years, and if eaten, their disease could migrate into human brains, where it manifested as variant Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease and was invariably fatal. So to stay safe, people needed to stop eating beef now. And indeed, in the 40s and ever after, less beef got eaten, less milk was drunk, and fewer jet flights were made. Of course, many people were quick to point out that these Children of Kali were hypocrites and monsters, that Indians didn't eat cows and so didn't feel that loss, that coal-fired power plants in India had burned a significant portion of the last decade's carbon burn, and so on. Then again, those same Indian power plants were being attacked on a regular basis, so it wasn't clear who was doing what to whom. Scores of power plants were being destroyed all over the world, often by drone attacks. Power outages in those years were most common in India, but they happened everywhere else too. The war for Earth was real, but the aggressors were nowhere to be found. It was often asserted that they were not in India at all, and were not even an Indian organization, but rather an international movement. Kali was nowhere. Kali was everywhere.